Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest live episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly and the recently released The Japanese Box and other stories. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs Since September, Move on Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today is one of our Vox Vomitus favorites, David R. Slayton, here to talk about his new book, which we've already read, even though it hasn't come out yet. So we feel really important right now. Dark Moon, Shallow Sea, David R. Slayton, welcome back to Vox Vomitus.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Do you? Why?
Well, because you're great. It's fun. We always have fun.
We do have fun.
So, David, for people who have not seen you appear on Allison's show To the Moon, Allison, or your previous appearance on Vox Vomitus, tell our viewers and listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we'll start talking about Dark Moon, Shallow Sea.
Sure. So I'm David R. Slayton. I'm the author of Dark Moon, Shallow Sea, out on October 31st this year. Perfect release date for this dark fantasy with ghosts and dead gods and pirates, because I love those. I'm also write urban fantasy. So you can see behind me, I have my Adam Binder series, which starts with White Trash Warlock, and that is currently a completed trilogy. It's also out in French, which I think is really fun. And
Baguette.
It's also just got a very sexy cover because, you know,
it does. Yeah, I will say, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
French cover.
I saw the French cover and I'm like, Adam Binder is even hotter than I thought he was going to be. Like, the French made him really hot. Did they not understand? They didn't understand White Trash and or Trailer Park.
Well, it's very funny because they build the book as a romance, which it's not. It's urban fantasy, but they sell everything.
A little bit in there.
Yeah, it's got a love story.
Right, like this, and you go, oh yeah, yeah, I see it.
The reviews are funny because, like, this isn't really a romance. I'm like, I don't know why they sold it as a romance, but people seem to like it. So, but yeah, I've got people reading it in French, which I think is the neatest thing ever. So
that is really cool. Now I want to see I'm sure I've seen it at some point. Maybe I just thought it was more fan art because I've seen some fan art of Adam and Vic and. Oh, hell yeah.
Right?
I pictured him either.
I know,
The books 2 and 3 are now out in a single volume. The combined trailer for Trickster and Debbie Dread, and that one's kind of the same concept with the same model in green. And I don't have my paperback of it yet, but I'm waiting.
God, I love it. All right, so continue. I'm sorry I hijacked with the French books are so hot.
Well, it's actually really good.
For Adam.
Perfect segue. See, I write fantasy mostly. Epic, urban, always diverse. My whole mission statement of why I write what I write is I grew up in Guthrie, Oklahoma in a trailer in the woods, and I love fantasy and genre fiction, but I could never find people like me, particularly gay characters who were the heroes. So I essentially started writing because I couldn't find the books I wanted to read, and that's why I write what I write. I also have a short story out in the thriller anthology based on Michael Jackson's album, I Got Human Nature. So I've been branching out lately into more contemporary stuff. And I have a gay geeky rom-com on the Kiss app called To Catch a Geek.
I love it.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Don't be on the Kiss app.
I am all right.
Kiss app at this time, by the way, but it's a lot of fun. So.
No, and I love it. Cause I was actually talking to a friend about how is it, when we have all the female protagonists in fantasy, they're always these brunette women and they're all interchangeable. And I'm like, as a brunette woman, I resemble that remark. And I'm going, how is it that anybody would have a problem with, at least for the brunette women, when we get gay male characters? Because she has a book coming out and it's two gay leads as well. I'm like, you get to ogle both of them. This is like a double win. Also, there's usually one you can kind of relate to. And if you can't put yourself in someone, oh, that's a male, I cannot possibly relate to them, then that's really imagination crisis there. And I feel bad for them. Because I personally, I love reading LGBTQ stuff. And I especially like the male-male stuff. stuff. And my sister said, when I was a child, she said, I am a gay teenage boy. I think it was just because I listened to too much Erasure and she was tired of me. But I've never had a problem relating to those characters. And anybody's like, oh, well, that's not for me. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Go read the book. It's for you.
Well, I went through the same thing when I was reading The Color Purple back in college, and I was telling my classmates about it. I'm like, oh, I just read The Color Purple and I really love this book. And one of my classmates was like, isn't that a black thing? I'm like,
you're like,
oh.
Were you still in Oklahoma at the time?
I explain a lot.
No, and I'm not trying to be like judgy at all, but
this book was actually in Texas. But
that's not necessarily going to change things in that.
Yeah, it's a slightly different vibe.
It depends on where in Texas.
But it was very much it's a human thing.
Do they not understand the concept of the human condition or developing empathy by reading characters that are not always the same as you in their background, their upbringing, their sexuality, their gender, the color of their skin, their religion?
Well, I feel like, so Allison, so you grew up mostly in California, which I think is just a little bit more open.
Sometimes we're better.
Depends on where. But again, I love what you said, David, because you said it's a human thing. Mm-hmm. I know I grew up in a very, very white, seemingly straight portion of the United States. Mm-hmm. And, you know, David, you grew up, you said, in Oklahoma. I've never spent a lot of time there, so Yeah,
I've never been to Oklahoma at all. I don't think
I've been there. I think I've been in every state around it.
Well, if for some reason you have to go to Oklahoma, and there are good people there, and that's
there are really good people there.
That's one thing I will say is, you know, when it comes to thing like political elections or whatever, I do get frustrated when people will ignore like deep red states or states like Florida or Texas, where we have all these terrible things happening, because if you ignore them, they get worse. And there are good people there. I have lots of LGBTQ friends in Texas particularly. And I feel like there's a whole thing right now, like, we'll just, you know, let Texas secede, abandon them. And I hate that.
Yeah. But
if you have to go to Oklahoma for some reason, visit my hometown, go to Guthrie. It was the state capital for like a minute and a half.
Like a hot minute.
1 minute of fame. That's all you get.
But it's beautiful. It has it has some great ghost stories. One of the most haunted places in the United States is there.
Perfect.
It's
actually,
I'm like, Jennifer sold right there.
Yeah. And I'm like, you have me at the most haunt. I'm like, I'm already like booking my trip.
It's a B&B. You can stay there. And
oh my God.
You can sleep.
I put a lot of those details into the Adam series. So if you want to know a little bit more about Guthrie, there's a plug. Read my books.
I won't lie. When I was reading the Adam Binder series, I was thinking, I kind of want to go there.
Good.
I want to go there. Like, as a queer woman, I definitely want to go there and experience.
Well, and the thing you were saying, like, don't ignore the states that are deep red. And it's like, yeah, because there are people there who we need to make sure don't get the brunt of that. And my sister lives there. Her family is there. I worry about my nieces growing up there. And, you know, they are biracial and they're in a part that's kind of blue. But again, if something happens to the whole state politically, one little pocket of blue isn't going to suddenly be exempt from that. So I worry about that. And I worry about Florida for tons of reasons. But again, we have people who we love there and we don't want to just be like, can we just cut them off and let them float into the ocean? I know people used to say that to us about California. And like, the big quick's gonna come and we're just gonna float off, and we're like,
I believed that for most of my growing up years
that we were
going to fall off the country.
We could. I mean, the big one, San Andreas, just cut us all off, and then we're just like, we're a bigger Catalina. We'd probably roll with it and be fine with us.
I just had like, I think, a really bad school system, so they told us it was like definitely happening by the mid-90s. California wouldn't exist.
School, and they're like, those Californians, look what they did. But okay, so David, I'm gonna take this is the worst segue I've ever done. California falling off sounds like some kind of climate catastrophe. And as we start with the climate catastrophe that happens, and is it Vercinay? Am I bungling these names you've made up? Because
no, Vercinay is perfect. Vercinay.
Is that how to say it? Thank God.
Vercinay. Okay, because it took me a while to put together all the pieces of the fact that the moon is gone, that's screwing up the tides. That's why the grief is running around, because no one's taking the dead away. It took me like, I'm like, oh, all this is connected. I get it now.
I know. I was just like, is grief another word for shadow?
Well,
and then I'm like, it's not another word for shadow, but it's like,
it's specifically because, so to give the listeners and the viewers context. So Dark Moon Shallow Sea is an epic fantasy. It's set in an original world. It's not unlike, Bersenay is not unlike a Dark Venice.
I thought it was. But I think because you told me that years ago, so I'm probably cheating because you told me that.
Yeah, it's closer to Naples in its seediness. And I had a friend who was just in Naples, and she was reading the book while in Naples. She's like, I have to stop. This is making me like look over my shoulder constantly with ghosts. So essentially what happened is 10 years before the book began, the knights of the sun god Hyperion killed the moon goddess Phoebe. And her death in this world, her function as the moon is the doorway to the underworld. So what happened is without her to take the souls away, the ghosts of the dead can't get to the underworld. They can't move on. Stop the tide. So there's, like you said, there's a climate or a geographic effect of her being gone. Slowed them. The sun has some effect. So the tides are calmer, but they're not nearly as much without the moon. And the night sky's dark. But the worst part is the grief. And it's the grief for the moon. The ghosts, as they rise every night, and of course, more and more ghosts pile up. So now we're 10 years after that event. Rafe, our main character, is skulking around the city. He's her last worshiper. He has to hide because he would be branded a heretic, but he has a final gift from her, which allows him to see in the dark. Shadow sight. But everyone around him is, the world is slowly dying because without the moon, the cycle of death, life and death is slowing and more dead are piling up. And as the grief gets worse, every night this mist rises. And it's using a Greco-Roman vibe. You can already sense that in the sense that I'm using Phoebe and Hyperion, Greek titans. And what essentially happens is if you so much as scratch yourself, the blood-hungry ghost will come and rip the blood out of you. So
I love that.
It's creepy. I love it.
So, I love that. So this, because this is the beginning of a series, seems, you know, it's much darker and more gruesome than the Atom Binder series, which... as somebody who loves dark and gruesome, thank you.
You're like, I like that.
You're welcome.
I like that a lot. And also I felt like calling the shadows and calling all of these spirits, just the grief as a whole. I think we as kind of a world right now can really understand that, because after going through the pandemic together and facing worldwide a climate crisis, we all have very similar hurts.
Yeah.
And I started to think of that as, oh, yeah, of course, we as a planet, like the current planet we live on, we are also dealing with a grief. So to have this physical, terrifying manifestation of it. Yes.
You're right. And I think one of the worst things the pandemic has done is it's accelerated our social breaking from each other. Mm-hmm. We're more isolated. You know, I barely left my house before, honestly, lockdown. But I am an indoors enthusiast, as I recently heard another author call it.
And I usually call myself a house cat, but I like indoor enthusiasts better.
Yeah. I say house mouse. I'm a house mouse, but I think has accelerated that problem of us. So I go out in public now, and it's starting to creep back a bit. But like, people don't know how to interact in public a lot now, and we've lost kind of that thin veneer of social grace.
Mm-hmm. Whatever was there before.
Yeah, there's a little bit, it's a little bit faded. And I go to the grocery store and I hate to see it, because I feel like we have sort of been broken in a way by this. And I am hoping to recover, if it's possible that we recover our ability to be together.
So you just recently were at New York City Comic Con. So that is, there's not a lot more out in public possible than New York City Comic Con. How was that as an experience for you as an indoor enthusiast / house mouse?
So I have a trick that I wear. If you see me wearing a suit, like a jacket, I always wear like a nerdy t-shirt and a jacket. That is my signal to myself that I have to be on. That is my,
yeah, so that's the costume.
Turn on the jacket, turn on the David.
Yep. When the jacket goes on, then it's extrovert time and I need to be on. So anytime you see me at an author event of any kind, I'll always be wearing a jacket over a nerdy t-shirt. And that's my psychological cue to, okay,
to be up. In the character of David R. Slayton.
Yeah. I love that. And I just realized, so gender roles, I'm just jealous because women generally can't get away with a t-shirt and then a cool jacket over. Like, we're expected to wear other stuff at these things. And I would like to start doing that too. And more comfortable shoes. Thank you. Even though I need fancier shoes to be taller so that I'm in the frame in pictures. Or just, I can carry
on. Just
a
stand
box.
On a chair. That's what I do.
No, we need to fight this. We need to get you sexy jackets from like Shein or something.
I just like try to wear like a half Halloween costume. Half Halloween costume is what I do. Like, I'm going out in public tomorrow night and I fully intend to wear a Halloween costume.
I love it.
You should.
I'm going to do my like Rose the Hat kind of queer icon. Yeah,
then you're going to be that this tall.
Because the hat will make me seem like I'm normal sized.
People think you're taller when you wear a really big hat. I love it. But okay, but even getting back into gender roles, something you did in your book that I had to fight my own stereotypes because certain characters, I'm like, Bishop, the bishop's a woman. I had to do that. I'm like, I was a United Methodist. I should know the bishop is a woman. That shouldn't be weird to me, but because of the fantasy setting, fantasy almost always, in especially with like the Greco-Roman back then, probably wouldn't have been a woman. So it's like most of the main characters are men and men in relationships with one another. And then some of the roles that you normally would see as men in a more typical fantasy are fulfilled by women. So my brain was constantly going, oh yeah, that's a girl. That's a girl. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. She's in charge. Go. I love her. Okay. But I loved that because it was something that was just like a little tweak that didn't upset like the fantasy vibe, but it made me go, this is not just yet another one where it's the same characters recycled. These are all different. These are new. And I'm allowed to ogle like half the cast because they're all hot.
I ogled the entire cast.
Yeah. No, and David,
not really the dog though. The dog is my favorite.
I did not ogle the dog. Thank you.
I didn't ogle the dog. To be clear, because I want to segue eventually into talking about the dog relationship, but I didn't want anybody to think that I was doing that in a sexy way.
Please don't. But I loved it. Shared with me a while ago and they were on your page and I almost like stole and reposted. I'm like, no, just redo it. People go to David's pages. You had people dress up as some of the characters in this book and you showed them to me, but it was before I had access on NetGalley to read the book. And so now I went back. I'm like, oh. So I don't know where you are as far as pulling these inspirations, but you write like certain guys you write. I'm like, that is like 1,000% my type. And is he available? And I think you told me the guys that you had model might have been straight. So that's like something that
I love the words might have been straight.
They were all straight. They were so. So I did a guest post.
Like 100% straight?
And they're also way too good for me. So let's start with that.
They were all super, they were all super professional. So let's explain this a little bit. So one thing I did for this book, and I'm actually going to start posting them today because the book is out in 6 days. But if you go to Joyfully J's blog, just Google Joyfully J, J-A-Y, I did a post for her a couple weeks ago about behind the scenes. And it's been long enough now, I think I can cross-post it on my site. But she's got a lot of the pics there, and we just talked about the whole process and the pictures. So to promote Dark Moon Shallow Sea, one of the things I really wanted to do was see if I could bring it to life. And I've had these characters in my head for so long. It felt like taking my sons to the park. It was the weirdest vibe. So first thing I did was find a cosplay photographer, Stephanie Tyson of Lost Stars Imaging. She does a lot of the photography for Denver's Fan Expo, and she's fantastic. So I reached out to her and said, hey, I want to do this thing. It's kind of crazy. What do you think? She's like, yeah, we can do it. And it's like, and so we aligned, where do you want to shoot? And Jennifer will particularly love this. I chose
haunted abandoned mansion,
haunted park that used to be a cemetery where lots of the bodies were left behind.
Of course they were. It's too much work to take them up.
So it's a park, but it used to be a cemetery. Do people know this? Yes. There like tombstones?
That's why you go.
I just want to make sure family is aware and they're not picnicking on somebody's grandma and are like, maybe this was disrespectful. We should have done something else.
Well, it's mostly hippies now, but it's Denver's It's Denver's Cheeseman Park, and it actually abuts to our Botanic Gardens. So every time the Botanic Gardens like builds a new structure or does anything, they have to get remains identified and removed. So what happened was,
My gosh, what a great job.
I know, it shows up in White Trash Warlock, but if you ever come to Denver, I'll show you.
I just thought that was fictional.
Nope, totally true. Totally true.
Because I thought at that moment when I read it in White Trash Warlock, I was like, that is the job that I would love to have.
Nope, totally.
I said it to my husband. I'm like, if I ever have to get a day job, it should be this. And he's like,
I think you probably need
what?
You need some, like, forensic science background. You went to school for theater. You were not qualified for this job, Jennifer.
My clown classes won't be qualified.
My friend Megan's a forensic scientist, and she's an amazing person to talk to, but terrible to have lunch with because she has no gross filter. Cheeseman has this pavilion that's where they used to have the rows of the urns, and the pavilion is classic Greek structure with the pillars, and so it's chipped and aged, so it was perfect. So Stephanie and I chose that for the site, and then all I had to do was find some guys and costumes. So I reached out to
I like that guys was first and costumes was second.
Well, I needed their sizes, so
it's not like Greg Brady when he became Johnny Bravo, he just fit the suit already. You had to go the opposite way.
Exactly. So I used to work for a store here in the Denver area that did charity fashion shows. And I remembered we had Wilhelmina Denver modeling. So I reached out to them and said, this is what I'm looking for. And they were great. Cassie sent me over like 20 different dudes. And she's like, how are these? And I chose the three dudes I wanted. And we got them as available. And it was Jake, and Dominic. And they were all...
Jake, and Dominic is
so...
literally a great title for a rom-com.
They were
Jake, and Dominic. Come
they on. Showed up. And then I found a stylist friend, Angela, at Indy 6, who's local. And so she's like, what do you want? I'm like, I need you to like, she got it right away. She's like, cinnamon roll, sunshine boy, wet and kind of dirty thief boy, and then sleeping beauty. I'm like, exactly.
So, you're like chef's kiss.
Exactly.
So that I said Greco-Roman, but some of the names did feel very Greek. Like Kinos felt very Greek, and his coloring was more Greek. And I'm like, he's Greek. I love him. He can come over here.
Well, the idea is that it's kind of in more of like a 1600s, 1500s era. So the idea is that when the Olympians defeated their parents, the Titans, they were banished to Tartarus. But some of the myths say they were banished elsewhere, and they went and founded a new golden age. So this is essentially when they left our world, they ended up in this world, and that's where the idea that the Titans are the dominant gods.
Love it. Did you do, so I know like in your brain you're envisioning it like, oh, it's current, it's the Naples vibe, but it's like the Venetian landscape. Did you allow yourself to go to Italy and eat all the food and call it research?
So many times. So I've been to Italy now.
Because like Italy's my favorite place in the world.
I started writing this book so long ago that essentially every trip I go, Eastlight is an island in the book that is really critical to the plot. Mm-hmm. And Eastlight is actually largely based on Paestum, which is not too far from Sorrento, which is an old Greek colony that was lost and rediscovered in the 1800s, where somebody's like, oh, we saw these columns in a swamp. And that's how Paestum was lost for a long time, and it's still they are still carving out and discovering. But there's three temples there that are all very well intact temples.
Okay, so are these on mainland Greece or are they on an island? Because I know there are a bunch of islands over there.
They're in mainland Italy. They were
mainland Italy.
They were Greek colony. It was a Greek colony, Poseidon. It also has a wonderful burial of a gay man. With the frescoes in the tomb showed him with his lover. And so it was very, but anyway, it's a great little out of the way stop that nobody goes to. I want to spend like a month there sometime, but
I know that's another book. I'm just like, what?
I'm writing a mystery set in a romantic suspense mystery situation set in Italy right now. So yeah, I've been to Italy.
Valid.
So I grew up super poor, and it's really important to understand this. I grew up really poor, but I don't drive a car since both my jobs are from home. I live a very modest lifestyle. And that allows me to go to Europe once a year or so.
Same. So that's my husband and I. He's Russian. He grew up in Russia. You know, not a lot of huge money there. I grew up very poor in New England. But that's what we do now. We have one car that we barely ever drive. We both work from home. I have a prepaid terrible cell phone. We don't do a lot of stuff.
Daily
but
thing
I'm like,
you have is cubby.
I have the most expensive thing I have is my dog.
Yeah, no.
And he is expensive because he is a precious
lord. He needs to be
groomed. He needs to be groomed. But yeah, like, so people are always like, how do you travel the way you do? I'm like, first of all, we travel on the cheap.
And
it's off season.
I usually go in January or February.
Like, we're going to Morocco on Thanksgiving night because it's the cheapest night of the year to fly internationally.
We're going to be pet free in a few years, sadly. And when that comes, we'll probably do the same. We'll spend a lot of our holidays abroad. But yeah, I've spent probably a total of, I was just in Greece in May, and my friend Helen met me from Ireland, the two fantasy writers in Greece. I just did a whole blog post about this on my website.
No, that just gave me chills.
That's amazing. We went to all the obscure stuff. Like, I drove her all over Greece and I made her, we went to all the cool stuff like Delphi but we went to Eleusis, we went to Dodonai, we went to places that people don't go to. We went to the Temple of Nemesis in Rhamnus, which was the coolest thing.
That just sounds like a Star Trek title. Like,
I know, but it's the goddess of vengeance.
Nemesis with the Romulans? What?
Their patron goddess was the goddess of vengeance.
I love it.
There was a hotel there, and it was me.
There's a hotel there?
No, a whole town. The whole ancient town is there. You have to hike down to it. It's a lot of work. Helen, and the people who guard the site, like the gatekeepers and stuff. And that was it. There were no other. We had the whole thing to ourselves. It was amazing.
Love it. Love it. So I know we just went on this whole like travel thing where I'm like, let's talk about travel.
I'm like, let's get back to the book, because otherwise I'm just gonna be like counting the years until my children are out of the house and I can actually do that kind of stuff and going, when are my children actually going to be actually gone? And that's another question entirely. And I was talking about some of the vibe and stuff. So we got the sun and the moon. And I was joking beforehand. I made lemon moon cookies because they are referenced in the book. And Jennifer has her sun Leo medallion.
You can't see it, but it is here.
And you have like the two sides, and then people finding commonality among things where you think you should be totally different because one is like literally their opposite, sun and moon, starting with one who's like, hi, I'm an outcast because my entire religion has been outlawed and that's death for me. And another one who's an outcast because he's like, hi, I'm here mostly because they were trying to get rid of me. So they sent me on this adventure that probably isn't going to go well for me. And yet I love both of them. And so where were your inspirations for these characters? And is one of the names, and I don't want to make this a spoiler, but is one of the names, does it have another origin that is not Greco-Roman or anything like that, possibly Gaelic, Welsh, maybe?
All of the names are either double meanings. Most of the names, the major names, are either double meaning.
Is Seth Meyers?
No.
Not even a little. I
know, but I went to high school with Seth Meyers, and I'm just he's the most famous Seth I know.
Seth is named Seth because of the Egyptian god Set. And the Egyptian god Set is interesting because he, like many gods, his story, as we think of him, he's now like the big villain. He's the darkness that he killed his brother Osiris.
Right.
Seth was originally a good guy, and he was the black sun. His job was to ride at the front of Ra's boat, the sun's boat, every night when it descended into the underworld. And he held a flail in one hand and I think it was a sword in the other. I'm a little rusty. It's been a while since I did the research.
About a war hammer.
I don't think it was a hammer, but I think it was a sword and a flail. But his job was to protect the sun every night on its journey through the underworld. So he originally wasn't evil. And spoiler, I think that's not a big spoiler because you get into Seth's head pretty quickly in the book, and Seth isn't evil, but he, Rafe, our main character, of course, would think him so because he's a knight of the sun. So all of the names have little twisty things about them. Like you picked up on the fact that Kinos is Greco-Roman. It's actually named for a famous battle. His Kinos Kerferre, and probably saying it badly. My Greek is a weird mix of ancient, modern, and then my own Oklahoma accent. But Kinos is he's named for a very famous battlefield that meant dog's head. So there's all these little things I did with the names of the places and the stuff. Some of it's really little Easter eggs for you, and some of it is my own invention of when I wanted to put some spins on things.
Well, I loved it. And I loved how you had these different characters. And again, the perceptions of each other based on, well, what group do you fall into? And therefore, well, you must be this because you worship this or you follow these people. But even down to the whole idea of, okay, what is our relationship to the gods? What are the gods' relationships to each other? And what is the gods' relationship to people? And should we automatically presume that somebody who says they speak for a god actually does? And I love that because it's like, yes, we're talking about this in the fantasy context, but you can't help but then come into like, and how does this play out into my everyday life? And go. Because it, you can't help but think of that. And then the idea of like, oh, well, these people worship something differently than I do. Are they automatically my enemy? Or maybe I should get to know them. And well, that is my political theory for the day. I am...
They're worried, and they're living in a polyistic situation. So one thing that's really important to understand about this world is no one in their world would say Hyperion is the only god, right, or Phoebe is the only goddess. That they would not have that kind of level. They understand that Phoebe, Hyperion, Rhea, all of them are real. Tethys, who, yeah, they're and they're a family. There's a, mm-hmm. and they have, and the gods have this troublesome relationship with each other because they're, you know, they're siblings and spouses and all the stuff that they have ancient, truly ancient history with each other. And that's one of the reasons I chose the Titans over, say, the Olympians. The Olympians, everybody's written about, and we all know
they're
them
really overdone.
Well.
Exactly. We've seen Hercules, legendary journeys. We're done. It's yeah, fine.
The Titans are more primordial. They're closer to the grandparents of the Olympians. So they're more elemental. They're less defined. Mm-hmm. And just, we've talked about travel, just trying to find statues or representations of all of them, which I do everywhere I travel and in my research, it's really hard because their worship, such as it was, came so long ago. Mm-hmm. So it was really nice to get to define that a little bit more and to color in some corners of their lore. And also because they are so less defined and used, I could make it leeway. Yeah, I can make it more my own. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the dogs? Sorry.
Okay.
Can we talk about the main dog?
I was thinking about the travel within the book, but I think the dogs, that's a better way to go, dogs.
Argos is the best fire pupper. He's so good.
The moment I was like, Argos, I'm like, new favorite character.
Like, I like
that. I was just like, immediately, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am here all day, every day for Argos and Seth. Like,
well,
that's.
And I was ahead of her and I had to confirm that the dog was going to be okay.
I know. I'm just like, there's a
dog.
The dog.
My dog's all right. dog's okay.
Because, so I won't lie, I have not gotten to the end of the book because, as I told Allison before we went live earlier today, I had 6 interviews this week, or like 4 interviews, and then I'm doing a panel. So I've read a huge chunk of 6 books in 1 week.
I don't even want to see inside.
I just haven't gotten to the end of any of them, and I'm dying.
Soup. It's just like soup.
In that way.
But here's the thing: it was a great reading week because every book, I'm like, "Damn it, this is really good." Well, this is really good. And then I'm like,
go back
wait.
To the rest of these and have to remember, like, wait, what's going on? And then don't put the wrong ending with a different beginning. That would be really confusing.
It's all good that many of them are very different genres.
That helps.
That would help.
Very good. Though I did have 2 Eds who both went by EA something.
Why would they do that?
But then here's the thing, Ed Amar, EA Amar, I just started his new book, but I know that we're not talking to him again until February, so I'm waiting.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like months away. I'm like,
I know, but I just had to do a little because I talked to him for New England Crime Bake.
You got time to finish mine then. You're good.
I'm like, it's fine. It's fine. And I'm weirdly now ahead of our Vox Vomitus reading.
Well, yeah, because next week we have an audio. Book, so that actually helps because I'm like, oh, good, audio. My eyes can take a break. But with Dark Moon, Shallow Sea, is it a series? Like, I mean, it feels like it could be, but we haven't actually.
Oh, is it officially a series?
I just like started calling.
Funny. So this is so funny. I sold it as a standalone. I have. So I love this book, but I never will write you cliffhangers or. Leave to
because that's mean
exactly unless I know I have the sequel. So like I ended Trailer Park Trickster on a cliffhanger because I knew Debbie Jordan would be just be out a year later and it would keep the people from burning my house down with me in it.
We don't know where you live exactly.
It's easy to find. The internet is just terrible.
But it was
not dark. That I've looked.
She's like got a map.
I know. I'm like, don't look behind this curtain.
It's just a map and like
it's just a map of where David lives.
Hilarious. So, but with Dark Moon, I wrote it as a standalone. I absolutely would love to continue it as a trilogy or beyond. But
sorry, I was like,
It's funny because I put together treatments for books 2 and 3. So far, they've only bought the one. So Blackstone, my publisher, who's awesome, has bought the one. But they are telling people, like, they're like, this is the start of a new series. So they're like,
I think I read a press release that said the start of a new series by David R. Slayton. And I was like, hell yeah. And then I'm like, does David know that?
Yeah, but it didn't have like a name. So when I was doing things for social media, I wanted to put like, it's the this series. And I'm like, it doesn't have a name. So.
It's the Gods of Night and Day.
There we go. Okay, we'll see. All right. I'm going to put that in the comments.
I've got the title for book 2. I've got synopses and pitches for books 2 and 3. And it really just depends on sales, to be completely honest.
We're just like waiting. And it's not even out until next week, but it's already doing really well on Goodreads.
Yeah, people are excited.
People are loving it.
I'm really happy. It's also just freaking gorgeous. It's got a map. It's got everything I've ever wanted. It's got this beautiful blue page. It's yeah. I can't get over.
We as authors are very easy to please when we're like, there's a map and look, it's blue.
Gorgeous interior art. Sarah Riesinger. And then
there's 4 chunks in the book. Oh, there's the map. Yeah, there's 4 chunks in the book. And so I was reading it on NetGalley and I could see that like this part. So I'd like go back to see what it actually said on each one to see what each of them meant because it was cutting them off and wouldn't let me see them. So.
And she's pretty naked. She's black, she's, leather.
Nakedness?
I love a good naked book. She seems shiny and naked.
Yeah, it's a black leather effect with blue marbling. Oh, and then every chapter, if it's Rafe, it has a moon.
Yeah.
If it's Seth, it has a sun pattern. So.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I got it saying sun or moon, and then the font for that is gorgeous. And then there's the 4 chunk dividers because each of those, but I couldn't see the full picture. I'm like, NetGalley, you're teasing me.
NetGalley is a tease.
The art card is finished. Also, that there's typos and things. So just note that if you ever read an advanced reader copy, it's never the finished version. Like there's always
a typo. Don't be mad if there's an extra copy somewhere. It's not, hasn't gotten there yet.
I won't say who the author was, but I got a very, very early NetGalley arc for somebody who's very famous. Very famous. But it was like 1.5 years before the book was coming out. It was really early. And I don't know how I got approved because this person has never been on our show. And I read it and like you could just tell like the formatting was just like not even there at all. I'm like, is this just her original Word document?
She just sent it out to people. And you'd think for that they would do at least a little something before they give it out, but so
they didn't. You know? They didn't. But the book was still amazing, but you could tell there were just like paragraphs would end in the middle. And then it would just be like literally like a list of ideas, it seemed. And I'm like, this looks like my rough draft.
I was going to say, I only get drafts like that from you and from Abigail, who will sometimes be like, I'm coming back to that. And
something happens, parentheses. I can't figure out the scene, but
placeholder name
next chapter.
For lead our dogs man. Here.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But then I ended up buying the finished product of the book and reread it. And it was so spectacular. And it was spectacular even in the arc, but that was the first one that I read that I'm like, oh, this is really early. But I loved it even more because it's an author I definitely like obsess over.
I have guess. I won't do it live, but I'll ask later.
Yeah, I'll tell you after.
It was this Christmas.
Like, I'll definitely tell you after. And it's a beautiful book.
Under the bus for the fact that, like everyone, authors don't write clean, rough drafts.
And we don't always have a say of what the review copy is going to look like. Because I know my review copies have gone out before. I was like, okay.
Well, and I torture my poor editors because I check, I do now, which is something I had to kind of learn. But every time it crosses my desk, I check it fully. So and this is something I want people to know is that when you write your whole book and you edit it and you get it together, but what then happens is when it gets put into publication format, whether that's ebook, print, whatever, somebody has to manually set all the line breaks and things. That means they often have to retype sections of it. So
you have to read the whole thing again each time?
I do because my first draft, like my first print run of Warlock had some stuff in it because I didn't know that. And And again, it's nobody's fault. Like a dozen people touched this thing. It moves through. But what happened was people like, oh, there's like a typo on this page or something. And I looked, it's like, oh, there is. But then so it's not about it for me. Every time the book crosses my desk, which my editor, I think, sometimes wants to murder me, and I send her cookies.
So she lemon has, cookies.
Or just in general. But I go through and do a line pass of every, and I take the PDF and convert it back into Word and then check it again. Because whoever's typesetting it can sometimes, because they have to retype sections, they might leave out a word or add a word or make a typo. Mm-hmm. So again, don't be too hard on the authors, because I can't tell you how many times I've read this book. And I wrote this book originally so long ago, and then I completely rewrote it for this time. So, because it had been shelved, and I was like, I love this book, but it's really bad. So
is this the book of your heart?
It is. This is the book of my dark little heart.
I was going to say, because when we first
talked. Thank you for sharing it.
Well, we first talked on To the Moon, Allison, like 3 years ago now. And it was right after, I want to say it was Trailer Park Trickster came out. And I read both books because I hadn't read the first one. You were someone that our producer at the time said, here, read this book. And I'm like, oh, it's a second book. I should probably read the first one. And I fell in love with it. And I saw your picture. I'm like, oh my God, it looks like Ewan McGregor. I'm going to be completely useless. And I told you that. And you're like, I love Ewan McGregor. I'm like, me too.
Oh my God, I've never looked at you like Ewan McGregor. And now that's all I'm going to see.
It's the damn first
it. I'm going to blush and go hide now.
It was the first picture that we had for him. I'm like, that one looks like Ewan McGregor. And now I've seen him enough that I see David and I don't just see like it's Ewan McGregor, and he's never done hello there, which really helps me not do that. But anyway, we talked for like hour after the show was over, and you told me about like this is like the book of my heart and it's not out yet, and it just was so encouraging, because that sometimes happens where the first thing that comes out isn't the thing that you really are just marinating over for years and want to have come out. And so I'm so glad that this one finally did come out, because you also for a while there you were just like taking up entire shelf space on Publishers Weekly with all your book announcements, because you had like Rogue Community College and you had this one coming out, and this was after the Adam Binder trilogy, and Blackstone they started throwing money at you like playing cards and just said, take all of our money and do all
take
that.
All of our money, do whatever you want.
They're amazing.
I'm glad that Blackstone's taken all this stuff, partially because they do, like, I love them for their audiobooks as well, but they do such an amazing job, and they obviously put a lot of work into a beautiful final product with everything there. And I know, you know, some places do, and some places are like, it's a book, there are words, just go read them. And they're like, no, this is beautiful, and it shows the value of everything in it, and it's a great experience to have. So it's one that I know I need to get a final copy of it, because, you know, NetGalley. Well, thank you, NetGalley, for my copy, but still.
Thank you, NetGalley, for our copies, but I'm definitely buying like a version of this because I need it in my hands. I need to see the pretty blue page.
There's a few more words, too. I literally took it to 100. So this is thin for Epic Fantasy. It's only 100,000 words, but it is almost exactly 100,000 words.
Like it's the perfect length for me for Epic Fantasy, because I won't lie. Sometimes I see the Epic Fantasies and I just think my ADHD will never allow me to read this. Like, I can somehow read 1,000 pages of horror, but if it's Epic Fantasy, I'm like
bored. It's the travelogue. I get very bored by the travelogue. Like, I'm on the eighth day of his eighth year. There was a tree on the side of the road that had 8 branches on it.
I know. And then, like, maybe too much history when it's like the father. I am the third son of the eighth brother of the, and I'm like
the beginning of the Terry Pratchett, the eighth son of the eighth son, and then you get a sorcerer and the wizard with 2 Z's and it's Rincewind. But the whole idea of that's one of the things I love about Blackstone is the audios are great. So when you do get the longer ones, I can do a longer book if I can just keep listening, because I just finished a 32-hour book, and that one I just did because I wanted to, because I'm crazy. But I loved it, but I probably could never have sat down and read that like now.
Yeah. I do a lot of audio, and like it's funny because when Blackstone published me, I was super excited because I'm like, oh my gosh, I love Blackstone, because I do mostly audiobooks. And Michael David Axtell, who read the Adam series for me and got to read the thriller short story, is also reading Dark Moon. So it's
one narrator?
One narrator, just Michael.
Does he sound different for the different guys?
He does a good, well... I haven't heard it yet, so I don't get to hear it till you do. So on the 31st, my partner and I take the day off work, and we drive to all the Barnes and Nobles and local bookstores and sign stock and give away swag to the booksellers. Aww. And,
I love that.
And as we do, we listen to the audiobook. So I will get to hear it when you do on the 31st.
So how do you feel when you listen to your audiobooks? Because I know, like, I can get like two, and you have to, like, you have to do it to approve it. But then there...
It's good.
It seems good. I have like panic attacks. My husband is always like, I want to listen to your book in the car. And I'm like, please do not ever do that when I'm in the car, because I will get, I will start crying.
You'll jump out the door.
I'll jump out. It's different. It's like a movie, right? If my stuff ever became a movie or a TV show, there's going to be things.
You know, you have to like really just like meditate and medicate. And then float out of your body.
No, it's just it's a different format. It's a different presentation. And you just, for me, I love it.
I love Michael, audiobooks.
Yeah, Michael does a great job, and his wife Meredith does the direction, and Brian at Blackstone, I think it's Brian, does like all the production on that side. And it honestly, I don't have anything to do with the audio except
let it happen.
When it starts, they send me a spreadsheet. And I fill out the pronunciations.
Which was good.
Fun for this one, since it's fantasy. I had to do a lot more than usual. Everyone knows how to say Adam. And then, but yeah, so I honestly, I won't know until the 31st. But for me, it's weird. It's the audiobook is when it comes alive. That's the moment when I thought it would be when I got my, you know, actual hardcover copy and I could see the map and all that. It, weirdly enough, in my publication journey, it's been publishing journey. It's been when I hear the audiobook. That's when it's like, okay, this is real.
I love that.
It makes sense to me though, because it's you're hearing it in somebody else's voice versus it's your words over and over again. Okay, this is a different font. It's on paper, but once someone else is reading it out loud, it's almost like you're getting to experience what someone else reading it would experience.
Yeah,
but that is beautiful.
Yeah,
like it's also terrifying. But no. I will say, like, the little times that I've been able to, like, physically sit through my own audiobooks, I'm just like, oh, that's beautiful the way they delivered that. I wouldn't have delivered it like that. And then I'm like, I'm terrible. I'm a bad writer. I should have known that. I should have. And then there are times that I'm like, I would have read that different. I know. As an actress.
As an actress and a Leo.
So we're going to come back to the Leo of it all. David R. Slayton, you are also a Leo.
I am.
But you said you were not like a
I'm not a cult leader, Leo. I'm more of a
cult leader, Leo.
Are you an August or July Leo?
I'm an August Leo.
When in August?
I don't know.
I'm August 20th.
Birthday on a podcast.
Don't
but
do
it's
that.
No, okay,
a
yeah.
little bit later.
Later.
I'm very close. I will say this, I'm close to you.
Okay. That makes sense that you wouldn't be cult leader and more I'll help you bury the body.
Well, it's funny because I think it's on Twitter. So I think anyone, I think my birthday is not hard to find. It's August 19th. So I'm just a day before you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We're practically twins.
And you look so similar too.
We're like, look at us. I look like Ewan McGregor too.
I didn't recognize you.
I know. It's me, Ewan McGregor.
It's me, Ewan McGregor. Like Mario. It's me, Mario.
Demand the Ewan McGregor discount wherever you go.
I love it.
Like, hi. I don't know if you know, but I am one day away from a birthday of somebody who looks like Ewan McGregor.
It's not a thing. But okay, so David, so the Gods of Night and Day series, I do want another one. So if you write another one and you're like, I need Betis, I formerly volunteered.
She's like throwing herself on the pyre.
Because if it hasn't been contracted yet, it might be a while till it gets out. And I have no patience and I have no chill. So I will be like, I would like an early copy. That would be lovely.
I feel like Allison's asking just for the synopses. And the pitch,
maybe
in private, not now.
I don't want to talk about the. I will tell you the title. The second book would be titled "The Silent Paths of Night."
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Is something that comes up in this one. So if you might recognize the line from a song that's referenced in Dark Moon, and I will say that. So the 2023 is Dark Moon Shallow Sea. 2024 is Rogue Community College. This is my Blackstone publication schedule. Mm-hmm. And then the next 2 years, 2025 and 2026, we're just signing the ink on something else that I can't say yet, but that will be, it would not be this series. So if you get book two in this, it probably wouldn't be until 2027.
That's a long time. Like,
that's a long time, but as, but here you're saying it now, though, you know what's going to happen. You understand it. We're not George R.R. Martining anything.
Never, I will never do that to my readers. It's another reason I do them so short too, is I don't want, and another reason I work in mostly in trilogies or duologies is I don't want people to have to worry about that. And I'm also more of a plotter than I believe he is. I think one of the biggest things that's run into some of these authors, they're pantsers. And
hi.
Hey. Whoa. It's like fighting words right there, Allison. Well, and I write, but
I don't write massive series like that. And even when I do for my romances, but they're not massive, and that's a whole nother thing. But the whole idea, most of my spec stuff, it's standalone and intentionally so. And some of it, like, okay, it could be a series, but it could also be standalone because you don't want to leave people hanging. And I want to say for Dark Moon Shallow Sea, you had an excellent ending. And I was like, you leave it open that there can be more stuff going on. Like, you didn't implode the entire world and kill off everybody, which means there could be sequels. But since it didn't say, you know, book one in that, I didn't know. So it was,
yeah, it's, I sold it as a standalone. I talk about it like a standalone, but as it's gone out there, Blackstone's super excited about it. They've been so incredible. They're doing all this great TikTok stuff. Like,
where's my contract, sir?
Well, they're I have no complaints, trust me. They're I'm very happy with everything they're doing for me. And
well, we're cheering you on for that ink. And when you say there's gonna be ink, and I'm like, you're getting a tattoo, but you meant contracts, and you know, that's,
I'm there for both contracts or tattoo stuff for you, David.
The full gallery is not on display today, I'm afraid. So
okay, well, I mean, that's like, would be like Vox Vomitus After Dark, where we're just like, any hoops. David, you are always amazing. We're really excited about Dark Moon Shallow Sea. And whatever happens, whatever contract is currently in the wet ink stage, we're going to cheer you on when it becomes announced. And you are always welcome back here. We adore you. Thank you for being part of another episode of Vox Vomitus.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody who's watching this live or on the replay, next week we have Christopher Golden talking about Slayers, a Buffyverse story, which is crazy. We love Christopher, and
he's great.
And we love Buffy. Allison and I talk about Buffy. I think 90% of our conversations are weirdly about Buffy.
I'm just hoping I can do the interview and not just be quoting it the whole time, because they'll be like, Allison, you need to stop. I'll be like, but I can't.
And it's okay. It's all going to be amazing. So thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. Stay tuned for next week, and we will see you then.
Bye. Bye.